Hey guys, this is John.
And Patrick.
Without Austin, and this is another episode of the Meat Just Sticks podcast brought to you by Walton's. So we're Thursday. We usually record on Wednesdays, but Austin sent us a message yesterday. He's out of the office for a couple of days, so we decided we'd record one just he and I. Now, last week's was a bit short. I'd imagine this one's going to be a bit short too, but we'll see what happens. Patrick, how are we doing today?
Oh, pretty good. I probably will forget to chime in because I'm usually, I can float and like decide when I
need things to throw at you then.
Oh yeah, perfect, yeah.
Or let's just make direct, like in eye contact the entire time.
I do that. Don't actually look at anything else. I do that the whole time. I have you on monitor here.
Oh, so
I
just fair kinda, enough.
It's like I'm watching TV while interacting with the television.
So we need some sort of signal. Like if I go, caw-caw, that means I want you to jump in. Okay. So a couple of things. We've got some Supreme Pizza Bratwurst up here with us that we cooked right before this. Yesterday we were doing, well, last 2 days, we've been doing a bunch of testing of new equipment, trying different sausage stuffers, things like that. We decided to make some Supreme Pizza Bratwurst out of some of that for something we do called Party on the Patio. Every third Friday of every month, employees all get together, two managers get some stuff or make some stuff, cook it for everybody, and we'll just hang out for an hour, play some games. This month, a bunch of us are going to be gone, so I made Supreme Pizza Bratwurst for the person who's staying and doing it, so they can just go and do it. I also made pepperoni snack sticks, which is something we don't do much. Just use the regular pepperoni unit and then treat it straight like a snack stick. They are pretty good.
That's all anyone wants is pepperoni, man.
I mean, there's a good argument behind that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've been doing is spending about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour every night reading a book called The Art of Making Fermented Sausage. So I'm trying to get more and more into the, you know, the dry cured sausage world.
And it must take you forever. A couple pages a night like that.
Well, all right. Let's think about what I said. I said 45 minutes to an hour.
Let's think about what I said. So it only you only get a couple pages in because you're slow reading.
Initially, you said that must take you forever.
Yeah.
It takes me 45 minutes to an hour, whether I read a page or 50 pages.
Mm, I meant finishing the book, of course.
So. Gotcha. Okay. Just trying to learn more about that. The science behind it's absolutely fascinating. Some of the words are, I feel like I'm in second grade again. Peritodectus.
That's pterodactyl. The P is
you're right. It looks like pterodactyl.
We knew that.
But it's really interesting. So I've been trying to branch out a little bit. All the batches of dry cured stuff I've made so far, which up until this last one have all come out, I think at least really good. Except for the one that we threw out that grew that mold that looked like certs on it. Do you remember that, Patrick? It was
tasted great.
We didn't eat it. We threw that right out. It had a white, round, fuzzy-looking mold with a green center. Mm. It's like, yeah, no, that's getting tossed out.
Which is tough because my favorite color is green.
It popped up over a weekend. I checked them Friday before I left. They were fine. I checked them Monday when we came back in. I was like, these need to just be tossed. But anyways, so I've used TSPX on all of that, and it's all come out great. Well, there's also LHP, Safe Pro, and FRM or FRC, something, one of those two. So I tried LHP.
CCR.
CCR, absolutely. Especially if we're making a Vietnam-era movie, has to be in there. So I tried the LHP this time, and that's a fast ferment, so we want to get it around 95 to 98 degrees for that initial pH drop.
Nice.
Oh, 98 degrees. We're nice. All about Nicholas music Shea, this time.
Man, we are crushing it.
So I put it in our smoker, our big pro smoker smokehouse. I set the internal temperature, you know, to get to 98 degrees and stay there. Something went wrong. I came in the next day. The fan was still running, even though I told it not to. And this is the finished product. If for those just listening, it's incredibly wrinkly. It has no like texture to it. So what happened here is somehow all of our fat melted out. I don't know how, because it was only 98 degrees. And you know, fat will start melting around there, but it shouldn't have been like crazy. And I thought I had good protein extraction on it. So I think it had something to do with the fan just constantly running.
Looks like a Jupiter's drop of sausage, you know what I mean? Those like, they drop a piece of molten whatever into water and then it solidifies.
Wait, that's not called, what is that called?
I'm not sure.
Prince Rupert? No.
Maybe.
It's that thing where you can squeeze it as hard as you want.
The shape of that reminds me of that.
But if you touch the tail, it all shatters. Yeah, it's something like that. You're looking that up?
Might as well.
So this whole batch has a very nice taste to it because we've got a nice tang from the LHP along with
Prince Rupert's drop.
Yes.
Mine was a song.
Drop of Jupiter. But I used the dill pickle seasoning in this, and part of me suspects that there wasn't enough like a dextrose or something in there for it to actually feed the starter culture correctly. So I think we've got some problems from that and also some processing problems. I'm not done with my experiments with LHP, but clearly I need to do some more research before I go forward with this. Now, in looking this up, I was trying to figure out what I did wrong. One of the things I came up with read was an FSIS document. And FSIS documents for, you know, doing it at home isn't always the best source because they're kind of focused on a different aspect of it. But I figured it would be worth reading. One of the things I read in a recent document from them was another key finding was that small diameter products like this one may require longer drying times to achieve significant reduction in salmonella. Therefore, if an establishment produces different diameter products but only has a study performed with one diameter, it must determine the impact of differences from the study to the actual process, e.g. drying times, to make sure the process is still effective in achieving the target 5-log reduction. Now, let's read that first sentence again. It says, another key finding was that small diameter products may require longer drying times to achieve significant reduction in salmonella. That doesn't make any sense to me. Right? So why would a smaller diameter product take longer than a larger diameter product? I emailed Dylan and he responded and kind of translated it for me. They're not saying small diameter versus large diameter. They're saying a small diameter may require you to go to the longer term of that for achieving the salmonella safety than it would just for dryness, right? So they're not saying this versus a larger diameter. They're saying this versus this for two different processes. They definitely could have worded that better, which is one of the reasons why if you're relying on FSIS documents, you better be really knowledgeable about what you're doing there because they're not phrasing any of this stuff for the layman, right? They're assuming you very well know what you're talking about. So just an interesting thing. This is probably in the end going to get all thrown out. I don't even know why I have it sitting in our dry curing cabinet anymore. Just, I guess, to finish the experiment. Sad. It's the first like loss we've had other than that one batch with mold. And this isn't mold. This is just something I did wrong somewhere in the process. So the next time I try LHP, I'll keep everybody up to date. But the next batch I do, I think I'm going to go back to TSPX. Just a little bit easier. We can ferment it in our dry curing cabinet or, you know, we can achieve the pH drop at temperatures our dry curing cabinet is capable of. So we will test that out. Now, there is also some cool stuff with LHP. You can do it at a lower temperature and it will change the flavor of what you're going to end up with. So when we do these videos, which we will eventually do a whole section on Meatgistics University, but we're struggling with what the structure is going to be like because a lot of the science is the same but also different. So we're thinking like one introduction to dry curing, and then breaking it down by which starter culture you end up using. So look for that to come out, but we won't be there for a while. As far as the Supreme Pizza Bratwurst go, I added the pepperoni like I've been doing for a long time, and it comes out really good.
Oh, nice. Look at that. Not a sound to be heard. Oh my gosh.
We have a mute button that actually works now.
It worked!
So Austin and I can eat on the podcast now without either annoying you guys to no end with our chewing or me having to lean way back.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you can probably still hear when I chew when I do that.
Yeah. Now it's about you guys getting good at using them. So that's awesome.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That That might take a while. It would also help with Austin sniffles.
Well, is he going to hold it the whole dang podcast?
Only if we feed him something hot.
Yeah. God, that's so cool. It's like I'm almost worried. It's just like, oh man, there's no sound whatsoever. And then
nothing's coming through.
Woo!
Maybe we'll tape down his button the entire podcast. Just to see what happens. Okay. I've got these two orange Walton's boning knives that we've been, I don't know why we took them out of inventory, but we clearly did. So I don't want to put them back into inventory. Well, let's hope that mute button still works.
Did it fall?
And it fell, for sure. But the first two people who comment, I don't know, Patrick, what are we going to say?
Oh, gosh.
On the post in meatgistics.com on this.
What's a fun saying we've said?
Team Blue. First two people who tag Team Blue in this next podcast are going to get a knife.
Get orange knives for Team Blue.
Shut up, Patrick. We're finally getting along again. Shut up. Patrick and I were going at it before this podcast because he made me move to this side. That's all it takes. That's funny. Yeah. That's all it takes is Patrick telling me to change sides and I get angry.
I go, I'd rather cover up the sink and stuff with the thumbnail graphic than...
And I told him I'd rather die than sit on this side. But here I am. So we see who has the real power in this.
I'm like, well, just sit over there. That's all it took.
I didn't want to do it. Relationship too strong a word?
Nah.
Co-worker relationship. All right, moving on to Meat Matters, unless you had anything else you wanted to talk about.
No. What segment was that?
That's just the general intro.
General intro.
It's usually what we do.
It's like pop-up video.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, come on. You're the older one here. Pop-up video. It was like a thing on VH1 where they'd play the music video, but then they'd add trivial facts throughout, and it was pop-up video.
I think you're vastly overestimating the amount of TV I watched as a kid.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because I assumed everyone was just like me.
No, I was outside all the time.
No, I did that too. I'm a much better athlete than you. Anyway, we should get an Olympics going in here.
In the media room, there's no question in my mind I'm winning a 40-yard dash. I'm winning.
I think it's funny that
every lifting event. Oh, no, chase.
I think it's funny that you think like track and field is like a sport to me. You know what I
mean? I don't think it's a sport, but I think the 40-yard dash is a good.
I disagree. For someone that played right tackle, listen, if we didn't block for you, you would have no glory growing up. So
I was not a running back.
Whatever, John. You know the point I'm trying to make.
I played defense the entire time.
I was the big nasties. We don't go off 40-yard dashes. We go off of, listen, I was a basketball player myself, too. So I'll just point at the scoreboard and go, like, I have way more points than you. So
I'm a terrible basketball player. So
I like where this is going.
Yeah. I was always terrible at, like, anything that required me to...
Score points?
Yes.
This is good for us. Yes. Yeah. We found the nugget. I'm good at scoring points.
Okay.
You're probably good at like
a defense,
making it look good.
A set or assists. Like,
yeah.
Lacrosse, defense. They're football, like, defense, and short yardage running back. But like,
they could rarely do like the thing where they measure your body fat percentage on you. And it's just like, oh, good. Way to go, Trimbley. And I'm over there just like, nah, I'm going to miss this practice.
I'm going to pass on this one.
It was funny. We used to have to weigh ourselves before every practice. And I thought, oh, we're supposed to be losing weight. So I would kind of fib a little bit, like a couple pounds or whatever.
Sure. You know,
they were making sure we weren't losing weight because they didn't want anyone to be too dehydrated and stuff.
Oh.
Like, and I was like, oh.
Huh.
Good to know, guys.
Well, that's good. Yeah, they didn't do that at all when I was.
Back in like 2000. Well, we also, I mean, sounds weird. Like, I'm going to offend you. What kind of scales did you guys have back then? Were they immediately digital?
We're using the sliding.
So, I mean, that's probably, could you imagine, like, before practice, like, you guys, hold on, let me get my weight, and then trying to calibrate it right. You hooligans would have never figured it out. We're just standing on a digital scale, so.
It's fair enough. One thing about that, so Austin and I talked about doing a DEXA scan, because he ridiculously claimed that he was stronger than I am, or, like, had more muscle.
Okay, let's not. I'm saying I'm scoring more points than you. Let's not.
Yeah. But Doug Nunemaker, who's on the pod or on the live streams.
Joe Dirtz.
Exactly. Yep. We've brought that up to him before on the live streams.
Did he have knowledge of it?
Oh, yeah, he knew it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, he knew it.
Good.
I think his name is pronounced slightly differently. But anyways, he actually.
Church it up.
He actually, that's like my best friend's last name is Roach. And for For like a whole year when we were kids, he tried to convince us it was named Roche. Ah, like, no, it's not. It's Roach. Anyways, he's local to Wichita, and he said that Austin and I can come in and do a DEXA scan for like a small
percentage of what
fee, it's right? Cost. So at some point, Austin and I are going to do DEXA scans for I don't know what.
How's he going to rig that? You know,
he will. He'll find a way. It's technology. He'll figure it out.
Oh man!
All right. Beyond Meat ditches jerky, plans price increase in U.S. This is from Ag Fund News. I don't know if you guys remember us doing this, but Austin and I went and bought two different flavors of the Beyond Meat jerky, and it was god awful. Mm-hmm. It was inedible. It tasted like soy sauce, soy-based soy sauce. It was just... And the texture, actually, the texture might not have been bad if I'm remembering.
Well, it's hard to want to see what the texture's got going on if the flavor's not there, right? Because you really got to kind of like push it together on the tongue and the roof of your mouth. And
yeah, you had to force yourself to chew it.
Yeah, you don't right. Want
so
that.
Then you're like, And I, honestly, I was probably trying to be fair to it. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, well, the texture's not that bad. So that ending is, I think, a good thing for the entire food industry.
So I went to the store the other day just to get bacon. They were doing like breakfast for dinner. And I go, okay, at least let me get some bacon with these pancakes. And my wife, she's like, well, don't get anything fake. And I go, why? What are you talking about? Why would I get fake stuff? Like,
right.
I'm not seeking that out. And then I go there and there's really only like, at the Dillon's I went to, like four different brands of bacon, really. You got your like the Hormels of the world and you got whatever that, you know, normal, you know, little black brand with the red and the green on it.
Yep.
And then it gets really expensive for less amount of bacon, but a thicker cut, so to speak. And then there was something that I was like, listen, this looks like it's trying to feed me all the no antibiotics, you know, all right. The keywords. I go, let's try that out. I usually just get the Hormel. I go, well, let's do that. It has the pictures of the pig on it, but it's saying like, oh, and it said it was uncured. And I go, okay, these are all the hot button words that I know that she'll love when I come home with it. You know what I mean? It took forever to cook. Like she laid it out in the oven on street, you know, to let the best part drip off. And yeah, it took forever. And the color wasn't as red. And I was like, is that lack of sure cure or something just simple like that? I don't know. So I was actually curious what you think might have been going on there.
So with a bacon, you wouldn't be using sure cure because sure cure is, you know, 6.25% sodium nitrite and the rest of it's salt and food coloring. When we sell a like a bacon cure, that's already mixed in. The cure portion, the nitrate is already mixed into it. It's possible that since they're using a no nitrite found in other than found in nature, so celery juice powder, if they didn't use something like cherry powder to act as sodium erythorbate to like help burn that meat red, yeah, absolutely, you could see some color differences there. The taking longer to cook part, I can't think of anything that would cause that. The only thing I can come up with, and this is just thinking about it for a couple of seconds, is if they pumped in more water, it would take longer for that to cook out. How was the texture of the finished product?
Not bad. Kind of like what you'd see at like a buffet or something like that.
So pretty good then.
Yeah, I mean, good. Like it held up. It wasn't floppy or anything like that, but it didn't pull apart. It didn't.
That's
it didn't
what I was going to ask. Did the fat and protein separate?
No, it's
then probably down. Not too much water because generally that will happen if you overpump
anything. And it was it said thick cut, and then by the time it is done cooking, it looks like three sheets of paper stuck together. Like it is nothing. It is nothing.
So thick cut to begin with, but you feel like it cooked down to pretty thin.
Pretty thin is being
generous.
Yeah.
Oh wow. It was, okay. Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should cook up a couple of different styles of bacon next to each other, review taste, texture, cooking times.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, why not just get the heavy, just that one,
that
one.
You get Hormel, you get Oscar. Does Oscar Mayer still make bacon?
Sure, who knows?
I'm sure they do.
And then one of the thicker.
And then like, a thick cut,
well,
no nitrate.
Because it went up from like, you're like, oh, I could get that for $4.99. Oh, that one's $6. And then it goes 11, 12, 14. I go, what's happening? And it's less, visibly less. Like you get six strips for $11.99, but they're advertised as the thickest thing ever, and it's got a lot of awesome fat on it. Or you get the thing that's actually in a tray that's like actually, you know, I'm saying tray comes with paper.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yep. Yeah, that's interesting. You got six strips for $6.99. That's or obscene.
$11.99.
Oh, ugh.
Yeah, you get like just 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it's like just shrink wrapped. And then they go, there you go.
So you got hosed.
I guess.
Sounds like you got hosed.
Yeah. When I'm dedicated, you know, it's like when you're going to get something that's slightly off your rate, you're like, I normally don't get this. What am I going to get? I'm failing. Unless it's sauce. I crush it with sauces.
You do crush it with sauces. That Kinder sauce you bought, that was it the spicy teriyaki?
Yeah, it was.
That is on my regular shopping list now.
I'll toss the whole chicken strip in that.
That is great. Stuff. All right. Beyond Meat, the first product, Beyond Meat Jerky, the first product to emerge from Firm Planet's partnership joint venture with PepsiCo, is being discontinued less than 2 years after launch. Brown Toad Analysis, after posting a $155 million net loss on sales, down 7.8% to $73.7 million in the fourth quarter of 2023. For the full year, El Segundo, California-based Beyond Meat, posted a $338 million net loss on sales, down 18%, with double-digit increases in revenue in international markets offset by double-digit declines in the U.S. So everywhere else in the world seems to be taking more Beyond Meat, and we are just not having it. Good job, Americans. Tip of the cap to you. Proud of us.
What if it had a cooler name?
Than Beyond Meat?
Like Carnivorous Rip. And you're just like, oh, dude, I'm getting...
Yeah, but we would like that, but...
Chew on this. Nah. That's what I mean. But, like, if you wanted to do a true replacement, you would cater towards, like, the people that actually eat meat.
I disagree.
Well, obviously, it's not working.
Well, because it's never going to be aimed at us.
Okay, sure. But if you wanted it to work, you would go like, hey, listen, guys, this meat stuff's... It's bad, okay? Here's a good replacement. And you don't go like, well, the liberals want to be all about it. And then that's why we're almost anti that.
But your whole initial target audience is going to be people who are not wanting to eat meat. Yeah. So if you call it carnivorous, whatever.
Need them. They don't eat a lot of meat anyways.
Yeah, but you need them to eat this thing, which isn't meat.
I don't want them eating it. I think if you wanted to make a successful plant-based protein thing, you'd go, listen, this isn't for you. This is for people that love meat and the fact that they just want to replace it and get, you know what I mean? See, now your eyes are opening.
It's a bold strategy.
We're going to get teeth on the packaging. We're going to have real drool. Every time you pick it up, it's going to be sopping with, yeah. See what I mean? Now you're on it.
Okay.
Imagine you go into Walmart, you want to replace meat. I still like the idea of meat. It's not that I'm against it, but then you go, hold on, I can live forever and eat the meat I want to have.
Put that on the packaging, will make you live forever.
It's the liquid death of meat. Isn't it awesome?
I still have never had a liquid death.
I don't think I have either.
Yeah, I have zero interest in that.
I have a lot of interest in it, but I just can't buy it. It's $3 for a can of water or whatever. So it's like...
It's really $3?
Two or three. I mean, yeah, it's...
It's also not just water.
No, now they have, I think, sparkling...
Flavorings.
And energy, maybe. Even.
Right, and I'm not sure. It's got... calories in it.
See, now they got us.
Like, why am I doing that?
Why didn't every company? What did Coke didn't start as water? You know what I mean?
I feel like a couple of those companies' biggest seller is water. It's just not in the U.S.
Yeah,
we're a weird market compared to the rest of the world.
Someone was even doing like some guy went to a grocery store and he took a picture of the entire aisle, like a widescreen, and then he color coded who owns what. And he went like, sure, this is Post and that's Kellogg. And that's
but they're all.
But then they're owned either by Vanguard or Nestle. Even higher up. So he went like literally like 90% of like, if you're just looking at cereal or sugars or whatever, and you've got the whole, almost 90% of it's like red, so to speak, and owned by one to two to three of the big corporations.
Okay.
And it's only like a small percentage of stuff, like a single cereal brand or two that's owned by, or that's like independently owned, so to speak.
Cereal aisle picture parent company.
That might come up.
Looking at it here, General Mills. Yeah, but like BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, they're investment firms. They don't, like, they might own portions of those companies, but they won't own the whole company.
No, that's not fun. You can't explain how it really works to me. You gotta.
All right, my bad.
You think the conspiracy guy brings his like normal buddy on and goes, actually, it's there were playing on the windows. We just couldn't see because of the poor video quality. Like,
here's my problem with conspiracy theories, though, is that people do that too often where they're like, oh, this makes it sound salacious. Let's just say it.
Yeah.
And ignore like, no, there are a lot of weird things that go on out there. But anyways, all right. Study identifies strong link between red processed meat intake and severe kidney damage in diabetic women.
What?
It can't just be the fact that diabetes is super bad for your kidneys. Oh, right? I mean, diabetes is extremely hard on your kidneys. I think a lot of people with severe diabetes eventually have to go on dialysis.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
Yeah. So,
and they got to wear long socks.
Let's.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Is that to keep the blood flowing? Yeah. Okay. But isn't that just, so doesn't that mean that it's just a symptom of diabetes?
Yeah.
Like I looked up a National Kidney Foundation thing that says a high level of sugar in your blood can cause problems in many parts of your bodies, including the heart and kidneys, eyes and brain.
Wait, so sugar's bad?
Over time, this can lead to kidney disease and kidney failure.
Mm.
So I don't think the red meat is causing that. I think it's the diabetes.
It's an old wives' tale is what you're saying.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying the exact opposite of that. Mm. All right, no one has seen the data behind Tyson's claim of climate-friendly beef. So this is kind of interesting to me more than anything else because millions of taxpayer dollars have gone into livestock companies raising low carbon beef. So there's Freedom of Information Acts right now filed for Tyson and two other companies right now trying to get the data to see like why, how are you labeling this as climate friendly? Like where is the data showing that this is actually doing it? There is one, ranch in Nebraska that has released like all their information and has proven that they are actually like quote unquote climate friendly. But other than that, it's just these third party companies
good.
That are like, yeah, no, this one qualifies.
They're good to go.
And then they have no requirement of ever sharing any of that information that they use to collect that. And this is a quote from a congressperson that says, because Congress did not provide USDA with on-farm oversight authority that would enable it to verify these types of labeling claims, companies must use third-party certifying organizations to substantiate these claims.
Certified by who?
Exactly. It's these, not shadowy, that's the wrong word, but it's these companies that no one's ever heard of, right? That then can just say, yes, this meets the requirements for low carbon or climate friendly. This lack of transparency from the agency worries environmental and legal advocacy groups, especially now that billions of dollars in taxpayer funds are available for agricultural practices deemed to have benefits for the climate. The Biden administration signature, climate legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, and Act appropriated nearly $20 billion for these practices. Another $3.1 billion is available right now through a Biden-era program called the Partnership on Climate Smart Commodities. This is an important test case for USDA. If they can't say no to a clearly misleading label claim like climate-friendly beef, why should they be trusted to say no other misleading climate claims? There's a lot of money at stake. I mean, I totally agree with that. If we're going to be paying as the taxpayer for these programs, there needs to be transparency so that people can look into it. The fact that somebody has to sue, which is what a Freedom of Information Act really is ridiculous.
It reminds me of like free range chickens. Like there's no one that's like, sure, it's some guy's job that just comes by and just checks it out, but like they have to have access to outside. So it's not like you, all right, you guys are getting the yard today. It's just no. They can't be completely enclosed, and the opening can only be like X amount of feet by X amount of feet, so they could just have access to the sun as they see fit and stuff like that. So it was kind of funny watching that Morgan Spurlock thing.
I was just going to say, nothing you've ever watched has given you more content for this podcast than Super Size Me 2.
And the fact that you haven't seen it, like me. I'm like, you should check it out.
No. I don't want it.
I actually won't watch that ever.
Patrick explained why he doesn't watch movies recommended to him by people the other day.
Tell me why. I don't think I know why.
Well, you said, it was like, I'm not going to watch something and the whole time be thinking of the person who recommended this to me. It's like, I'm not doing that.
I have a picture in picture of like John's face just next to, like, see, people have told me their favorite movie in middle school. And I'm like, I probably won't check that out. They're like, why? I go, just think of your face though, that's in the corner. No.
I'm not going to like that.
No.
All right. Seasonal beef demand beginning to develop. This is from DTNPF.com. So it says strong seasonal demand usually ranges from the beginning of May through Memorial Day and into the first couple of weeks of June as retailers stock their coolers full for prime grilling season. In the 2023 spring rally, choice boxed beef prices rallied from $33.07 from May to June. However, in 2022, the spring rally in choice cuts only gained $9.19 from May through the first week of June. So that's a reduction of a third, basically. Or it's a third of what it was previously. Consumers have already shown they're not willing or able to spend as freely as they have in years past, and would be surprising if the market came close to challenging the 2024 choice top of $313 logged in March. Regardless of where the May-June rally top lands, seeing demand increase will help the overall market as it will encourage packers to continue to procure cattle in cash sector and possibly allow feedlots to advance live cattle prices before show lists expand over the dog days of summer. I read that and I just, in the back of my mind, I think everything price is going to go back up and it's going to be harder and harder to get good cuts of beef at your grocery store again.
I was looking at Sugar Ray. He said the dog days of summer. And I was just...
No, yeah, I hear dog days of summer and I just think of that Don Henley Florence or... and the Machine.
Oh, Florence and the Machine.
Yeah.
We're all over the place.
The dog days are over, right? Isn't that that?
You tell me, man. I'm more into... I like... See, you young kids always hit me with these bands I've never heard of.
You're into thrash metal. Nobody knows any of those bands.
That's from 1984, though.
Seasons After?
I don't know.
Was that? Yeah, that you sent me one of their songs a long time ago.
I don't remember.
You
have me confused.
I do not. It's the song from...
I don't understand the reference.
The Lost Boys? Yeah. Yes, that song.
Movie music is different. That does not count. You're not bound to the band. It's a part of the movie, okay?
But this is a remake of that song. Yeah, if you've never heard it, Seasons After... Is it called Cry?
Dude, that's so funny to me. I don't even know. Like, I think it is.
The movie from the 80s, Lost Boy, had this song in it that I always thought was awesome. And it's like song.
Cry Little Sister is what I type.
So look up Cry Little Sister, Seasons After.
Yeah, it's a Wichita-based band, too.
It's a Wichita.
Do you not know that? That's why, it got put onto my radar kind of weird. Because I was in the movies and vampires. My buddy's like, oh, check this out. I go, that's that? I go, that's... that song. He goes, yeah, they're from here, dude. And I went, shut up. He goes, not anymore. So I go,
oh, they got too big, they moved on.
Some guy might have died, I'm not sure. No,
fair enough. That's sad.
I'm not sure.
That's sad,
but the song's a banger.
The song is awesome. Yeah. I love it. Pork powerhouse 2023, sow numbers, pig profits down while productivity up. So just keep hearing more and more of these stories. There's no question 2023 was a tough year financially for the pork industry. Wait, brutal.
So they're getting busy and making less money.
Yeah.
Sucks.
So certain cuts of pork, at least, I don't know about all of them, are a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
So they're under contract.
You know what is? You started saying how beneficial pork loin was to everybody and how many grams of protein that it actually outweighed, you know, one-to-one on chicken breasts and stuff like that.
Okay.
And now you drove up the price of pork. You know what happens? I collect video games, and these guys talk about rare video games they find, and guess what? 100,000 people watch it at once. We do not have those numbers. Pause. And then, but then guess what? You drive up interest, and then what happens?
So how much attention have you paid to like the...
That's not fair. I don't like where this question's
going. Well, like do you know what a trash coin is?
Sounds like there's room for a joke there, but I can't think of it.
Okay, so it's like... something worth less than a Dogecoin.
Okay.
Right. Like somebody comes out with their own coin and then they start talking about it, drive up interest, and then they sell all theirs.
Yeah.
So it's just like a pump and dump.
Ah.
So people are.
I'm forgetting the unethical portion where you then dump it all. Yes. Just like, I'm going, oh, come on. Everything's all expensive.
But if you already have those, you'd be happy.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. I'm just on the other side of this one.
All right. So brutal, horrible, and one hell of a challenge were some of the descriptors the powerhouses used when asked about the swine production in 2023. The annual pork powerhouse listing now is in its 29th year, ranks hog operations by numbers of sows. This year's list includes operations with more than 25,000 sows. With 4,164,000 sows, the pork powerhouses represent 69% of the nation's breeding inventory based on data from the quarterly Hogs and Pigs USDA report. So there's fewer. Here are just a couple highlights from it, right? There are fewer sows in 2023. 36 companies, one fewer than in 2022, had more than 25,000 sows. Of the 36 companies, 17 remained constant in their sow numbers, 10 reduced numbers, and 9 added some sows. Collectively, they reduced sow numbers by 17,000. That was from 2022 to 2023. Profits are down. I don't have to tell you the industry is hurting right now from a profitability standpoint. Bob Ruth, the president of National Pork Board and past president of the Pennsylvania located Country View Farms, said. The Iowa State University estimated livestock return model showed a loss of $57 per 270-pound finished hog in April of 2023, with an average of $31.57 lost per head for the entire year. Production continues to improve, so while profitability fell, production was up. Producers credited improved genetics and continued investment in health and biosecurity. Smithfield closed a sow farm in Missouri. Minnesota-based Pipestone Management has moved into the number two spot, selling sows and enhancing efficiency. So more people are obviously selling sows. Just there were some other additions at the bottom. But pork industry is going through a bit of a up and down time, I guess.
Yeah.
Which feels like that's just what's been going on in the entire meat industry over the last couple of years.
Two things. That article was a mouthful. My gosh. The amount of peas just in the first. Park
powerhouse. And
well, that's what I meant. It sounded like Rolling Stone describing like the new cattle decapitation record or something. My God, you were just. Wow.
I probably didn't have to keep saying that, the name of it.
Pork powerhouse.
All right, this is from National Hog Farmer. Strong first quarter for U.S. pork exports are a bright spot for U.S. beef. So this is kind of, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. Did we have a podcast last week? Yes, we had a short one where China is down like 30% in overall sow production or pig production, pork production. But we have increased our exports to them. And this is just reiterating that we were up with a total value of $740 million per quarter. And that is up 2% over the last year. Now that is to South Korea. That doesn't include the China increase that we talked about last week. So pork exports are doing very well. It's just our domestic pork production that is struggling. All right, moving on to wild card.
Well, what would you name a pig?
I mean, it's got to be Wilbur.
It's got to be.
Well,
I wasn't a huge fan of Charlotte's Web. They introduced, like, I was ready to just learn about different stuff. And they go, oh, hey, let's really Charlotte's pause. Web.
What? Wilbur is not Charlotte's Web.
What is Wilbur then?
Isn't that Green Acres?
I don't know. I know there's a Wilbur.
We're stretching
There's a Wilbur in Charlotte's Web.
Is there really?
I think so. Why else would I know it? I didn't watch Green Acres.
What's Green Acres is the place to be.
Yeah, I know the intro. I don't know the show.
The pig from Green Acres.
That's how much TV I watched. I mean, I could tell you about it. I don't know anything about it.
Arnold. The pig's name was Arnold.
In Green Acres?
So you're right, and okay. I'm wrong.
Wait, can you repeat that?
You're right, and I'm wrong.
But all right, so you would still name it Wilbur, though? Or no, you'd name it Arnold.
Now I'd name it Arnold.
Okay, cool.
I'm sure I read Charlotte's Web at one point, but...
Well, imagine you're like in the second and third grade, and then they go, hey, by the way, we're going to learn about this like farm and a chick it's and clearly a spider. Not
for you.
I was like, right. Well, this is lame. Right. And then they followed up with like, Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, where's the war in this?
And then they go, oh, and by the way, Sarah Plain and Tall. So reading for me early on.
My sister was a teacher, then a school administrator, and now is just a lady. She's now a housewife or, you know, a stay-at-home mom. Last time I was up there, I was talking to her. I'm like, school was never designed for young boys.
No.
And she would have like firmly fought against that before she had her first boy. And she's like, oh no, yeah, totally. They don't like, this is not designed for young boys at all. Like, they're trying to make us read things. We have no interest in reading. They're trying to make us sit still. Like, no, we want to go do things.
Yeah.
All right. Tangent. All right. Goose lands in Kansas Zoo exhibit and the counter ends in a shocking fashion. This is specifically for Andrew Flippin.
Bummer.
I'm specifically bringing this up for Andrew Flippin and for Ali Walton, both of whom tend to think that a gorilla would beat a grizzly bear in a fight. A Canadian goose beats this silverback gorilla in a fight. It chases it all around and like basically takes the yard from it. So you can spare me with that. Any chance of a gorilla beating a grizzly bear?
I don't even think I can chime in on that.
Yeah, there's zero. For all of you who laugh at me when I say you should be careful going into fresh water because there can be sharks in there. They have caught a bull shark in the Guadalupe River 5 days ago. Yeah, 5 days ago. It was a good sized bull shark too. Enough to take your leg off for sure. I've gone tubing on the Guadalupe River.
Bummer.
A terrible bummer.
You could have got got.
You're
man.
Sitting in your tube. Your butt is hanging down. You think you're fine.
Ugh,
and then
you're so exposed.
It just pulls you straight through the tube. Razor, and everybody looks around.
Razor sharp pain.
Where and then going? All of a sudden, blood just comes up from underneath.
Yeah.
That's the opening to a movie. Stay out of all freshwater. Charging grizzly killed by handgun wielding shed hunter. This is from Meat Eater. Anyone who is not ever listened to the Meat Eater episode called The Meat Tree, Part 2. You need to go do that right now. As soon as you're done with this podcast, go to the Meat Eater podcast and listen to The Meat Tree, Episode 2. You'll want to go back and listen to Episode 1 after you listen to 2, but get hooked on Episode 2. It is about them getting charged by an immense grizzly bear, and it's absolutely fascinating. But this was in Montana. The guy took 5 shots at it, starting it when it was 30 feet away, ending when it was at 10 feet away. He missed with 3 shots, grazed the bear with 1 shot, and took it down with the 5th shot that went right into his chest. That's all the information they give. They don't tell us what caliber gun he was using. One of the things they do say surprises me. It was a 12-year-old female bear, and it was about 300 pounds. That feels really small to me.
She's not even a teenager yet.
Right? That feels really small to me.
Coming right for me. I'm imagining that first scene in Men in Black where that alien sees that cop and he just starts just, here we go, rushing. And then he's like, ah, then someone else pulls out the gun and has to blast it. And then all the blue goo gets all over
the first face. Men in Black?
Yeah. Very first scene in the first Men in Black movie. You wouldn't.
In the cornfield.
It was dark. It was I thought it was the desert, but you know, whatever.
Okay, whatever. It's out there in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, I do remember that.
I was a child.
Okay. No, there is people who are wanting an investigation into this, saying that is like what happened.
Alien,
like
the alien life form?
Nope. The South Park, he's coming right for us. Like the bear was, they're saying the bear was not coming right for him.
And then they reposition the body. Hold on. Grab its claw. I'm going to add a scratch to my shirt. They just do a rip.
They pulled out his backup gun and threw it down. The bear was armed. It had bearing arms.
It's cocaine on it. Look, it's a cocaine bear right there.
So, there are people who are saying that the bear was not actually charging this person. I'm just surprised that a 12-year-old female bear weighs 300 pounds. A grizzly bear weighs 300 pounds.
Her parents must be worried sick.
Very small. Like Brutus is almost that.
Yeah.
Brutus is like 220.
Dude, I'm almost, no, I'm not 300, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As far as
it's not that much bigger.
I'm going to run at you and you act like I'm going to endanger your life. Okay.
Dude, we don't want that. Yep, drawing, and you're...
Thanks for checking out the Meatgistics podcast. To shop everything but the meat, head on over to waltons.com. To get your meat processing questions answered by experts and enthusiasts alike, head on over to our online community at meatgistics.com. Waltons, everything but the meat.